This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This BFM Budget 2022 special is brought to you by Ma Sing.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Leechwe Lin. It's the eve of Budget 2022, so we're talking about budget wish lists.
First, we'll be exploring what would be helpful for the B60 community, and then what would a gender-inclusive budget wish list look like?
Tell us, what could the government put forward in the budget that would actually be helpful for you? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08 and it is that time of the year, perhaps not as exciting for everyone else, but certainly very exciting for us here at the radio station, because Budget 2022 is being tabled tomorrow by Finance Minister Sri Tengku Zafrul Abdulaziz. And I think it's coming at an interesting time. New Prime Minister, post-pandemic, as we're moving towards an epidemic, hopefully. So, needless to say, I think lots of eyes, lots of curiosity about what's going to be unveiled.
Sorry, moving towards an endemic, surely, not an epidemic. We cannot take it, Sharmila.
I'm sorry. My brain actually apparently can't take it.
No, but just to say, I love the idea that we are post-pandemic. And yet, I think that this is a budget that's probably going to have to do a bit of looking back and looking forward, right? Because it is going to have to account for the kinds of damages that the people have sustained over the last year and a half, over the last 2 years. And so just to give a sort of forward look at what this might encompass, we know that there have been some documents released, some pre-statements to indicate what it might cover. This is what the Prime Minister has said. Budget 2022, from the people, by the people, for the people. It would be of high impact. Again, this is a recurring theme with this administration, and is going to encompass aid for the B40 and M40 groups, support for businesses that will ensure micro, small and medium enterprises have access for funding, generate more jobs to tackle unemployment, enable the recovery process to return the country's economy to the pre-COVID-19 pandemic levels. It's also expected to be friendly for people with disabilities. What that might look like will be interesting to see. And that the budget was drawn up carefully and comprehensively, taking into account the views of all quarters, including opposition parties. And this is to meet the aspiration for Keluarga Malaysia. Apparently, there were also 50,000 suggestions from the public that were considered and taken into account.
So you mentioned high impact, high performance. I think these are all words that have been thrown around quite a bit by this administration. The other thing, of course, was this notion of a pre-budget. And therefore, I think the focus on transparency in some sense of including us in the process, keeping us informed in the process, I hope that's not just lip service. I'd like to see not just a budget that is inclusive right now, but a budget that continues to be transparent as we move forward as well. And one of the things I think that has been picking up a lot of steam is this notion of, within that umbrella of inclusivity, gender is something that has been, I think people have been calling for more focus to be given to a gender inclusive budget. The Women's Aid Organization, for instance, has pointed out how economic recovery should necessarily include measures to help women, families and vulnerable communities. And on that vein, 20 civil society groups have actually launched the Gender Budget Group. And that's a coalition that is essentially making recommendations for how this can be done. So they're advocating for gender responsive budgeting, and they've even submitted a memorandum on things that can be considered. I am very, very curious to see what this turns out to be and whether it will be included in that sense.
All of this really stems from the fact that if you're going to say that the budget is for the people, who are the people? And I think that that's what we're trying to get at by looking at specific groups and how it is that they will be affected by the budget, but also what it is that they are asking for. Because I think that is going to be an important frame in looking at how effective the budget is when it is announced tomorrow. Because again, if we're going to say it's for the family of Malaysia and all these things, and that sounds great, right? I think we have to acknowledge who it is that the budget needs to help the most, or, you know, what kinds of initiatives are within the budget that would be most helpful, which is our word of the evening.
I think it can be a little bit tough or removed to listen to something like the budget and perhaps be able to hone in or understand how it applies to you as an individual and how it might apply to you as a community. And so I think it is perhaps important for us to view it through that lens. What are these things and how do they translate onto the ground? And so that's why we'd like to hear from you. What could the government put forward in this budget that would actually be helpful for you? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll first be looking at what the B60 community needs from the budget. And for that, we'll be joined by S. Arul Chelvin from Gabungan Marhain and Parti Socialist Malaysia. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9. It is 6:16. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn, and we're looking ahead to tomorrow's Budget 2022 announcement. And we'd like to hear from you. What could the government put forward that would actually be helpful for you? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're first going to look at the B60 community and what the budget could do to address their needs. And for that, we're joined by S. Arul Chelvin, who is from Gabungan Marhain and Parti Socialist Malaysia. Arul, welcome to the show.
Hello. Now we are calling it B60, right?
That's right, we are.
Okay.
So to start with then, what would your wish list be for Budget 2020? What are some of the main issues you'd like to address?
I think major issue would be to empower social security. I think because a lot of people are losing jobs, and this is one sector we think which really need to be enhanced. Of course, minimum wage, it's time for minimum wage to be increased. We would want a living wage. We're talking, if you look at the government statistics itself, minimum wage should be 2,200. I'm sure we're not going to get there. But at least, even if we get something like 1,005, which is also very difficult, that would be a great for workers to get a minimum wage of 1,005. I think housing and more money should be put into public health care and housing for the poor, because I think there's a lot of people waiting for houses to be built, low-cost houses to be built. They can't buy the houses which are currently in the market. And I think there should be money allocated for climate change, where we're seeing a lot of floods all over the country. And I think issues have to be addressed. And of course, I think every child, B40 child, should be given a free tap or an internet data free. You know, I think some countries are giving children free laptops and all that. I think it's time Malaysia, being a country which is reasonably okay, not to say we're a very poor country, we should be able to allocate one free tap for every child so that they can all go to the school with the same level with the other children who can earn money, higher money by the parents.
Over the last year, what have you been hearing from people on the ground about their main financial worries?
Major issues have been, of course, termination and losing jobs, or they can't get the same income which they used to get. Also, a lot of people complaining about eviction, house owners asking them to move out because they can't pay. All that is linked to salary. Of course, and also increasingly worrying thing is among younger people, we've been seeing a lot of young people are into depression and mental health issues, which I've not heard about some years back, you know. But today, a lot of young people are having all these problems. So everything has to do with the pandemic, economic crisis, you know, so these are the cases we've been getting for the last 1 year or so.
And on the other hand, what are some long-standing issues that have yet to be resolved that you'd like to see them address?
One critical thing, I think, aid should be always given based on need-based and not through racial, I think this is something which we need to deal with it once and for all. All aid for the people should be based on need-based. Second thing, we need to have a proper database. every time, you know, when the government is coming up with a new scheme, everybody is asking for aid, and we don't know where they are, you know. And I think this is something which we need to resolve. We can't ask everyone to each time, you know, put up a white flag and all that. There must be actually in every taman, every flat, every residential area, we should be able to know which are the poor living there, who are the extreme poor, hardcore poor, you know, the and where they can get the aid and who we can, how aid can be passed to them. So this should be, this database should be there. And I would go again once to say that we have to resolve the issue of housing. Like in Klang Valley itself, there's about like 50,000 people in the waiting list to get low-cost housing, you know. And then you hear in other places, there are flats abandoned. People only stay in the first floor, second floor, third floor, and then the nobody is staying in the other apartments. So there is a real issue of mismatch, and I think it needs to be resolved. And of course, the problems of farmers who are facing eviction. There's so much of they don't have enough land to build, to plant vegetables and all that. So I think these are the issues which has been keep coming to us: housing, farming, and as well as evictions. Yep.
So when it comes to direct aid, right, and ensuring that it happens efficiently and appropriately, what approach do you want to see in Budget 2022 on this?
You see, we have been always proposing for a modified universal basic income, you know, and we have identified, actually, if you give such a scheme, we think 700,000 families would be entitled for that. And if we give the 700,000 families, which is 10%, and we give them a 1,000 ringgit a month, we would need 8.4 billion a year. I think this is something which is affordable because our budget is normally above 200 billion. Here we're talking about 8.4 billion of the very poor. These are the non-formal sector. You see, the current government aid through SOCSO and EPF, it's mainly for the formal sector. If you're already in a SOCSO scheme, that means you already got a formal work somewhere. You know, you're already covered in some way. You know, if you're getting money, you can allow to take money from EPF, that means you had already a job before. You had some savings. But a lot of people who work in the gig economy, the riders, the people who work in Pasar Malam, the people who wash dishes in restaurants, they don't come into any of the aid. That is why a basic universal income, which is a direct aid, should be given. And it should be, and we think we can give to this selective group of people, and we put the figure as 700,000 families.
Arul, you mentioned affordable housing earlier, and it is a huge issue. What are some initial steps that you'd like to see the government take in this budget, as well as moving forward?
I think on one is the PPR flats. Like, I think there are many areas where there are apartments which are not occupied. So the government should immediately take over it, take over the management, enhance it, and make sure people can live in it. And then I also feel we should have like a one-stop center where house buyers and those who are renting, because a lot of them, there's currently a lot of crisis where people are forced out. And you know, so you need a one-stop center, like a department where everyone goes there and they resolve these problems. So I think that will help a lot of people facing eviction now because they can't pay the rent. Owners are chasing them. So if there's an intermediate government body to deal with it, would be very good. And we think that the government should take over all the low-cost units like Singapore. You know, they should take over the management of low-cost units. And then, and people are taxed accordingly, you know. So it is something workable. Currently, with the setting of having it through JMB, Joint Management Committee, it is not really working. So I think we need to deal with it. We need to, you can build houses in 1 year, you know. 1 year, low-cost houses, rapid building with the new technology can be built. So there is need to build low-cost housing in urban cities, like in Johor Bahru, Penang, you know, these are places which really need housing, you know, and there's lack of housing there. Yeah.
What kind of measures would be helpful on the issue of employment?
Okay, I think employment, of course, is a big issue. And I think there must be enough protection mainly for the gig economy. Those who are riders, those who are doing this non-formal economy. So there must be increased laws have to be amended so that this group of increasing number of workforce will be protected. Another way is also to reduce working hours so that more people can get jobs. And we should have our universities, our colleges should have enough work, you know, like for example, we need a lot of domestic help from workers from Indonesia, Philippines. You know, we should be able to produce our own domestic workers. Our colleges should be able to train our own people, and they should be well paid. So it is a way of looking at what we really need now, you know. So there must be increased job opportunities in other sectors like green jobs, farming, food production, constructing more hospitals maybe, you know, equipping healthcare facilities. So jobs have to be diversified. So jobs have to be created, and we need to build essential things like hospitals and invest more on food production. So that's how I think we need jobs can be created.
Now, on that note then, one sector that has, of course, faced a huge blow are small businesses. Now, what kind of initiatives would you like to see from the budget that can make a long-term sustainable difference?
I think SME, one thing, there is no clear database. I think one important thing is there must be proper assistance for SMEs. Previously, the government says, you know, when minimum wage will be introduced, SMEs will be assisted so that they can pay their workers. But that never took place. So SMEs need to be identified and needs to be properly supported. A lot of SMEs actually, there's so much bureaucracy, and a lot of small companies, they pay money, corruption money to local government and different people to get their work done, you know. So I think one way is to, if you end corruption, and so that these SMEs don't have to corrupt other people, and they can take their income back, that will actually assist them. So there must be less bureaucracy, less corruption, and then proper database for SME where we can directly assist them. And this is a group which really needs to be assisted, yes.
Aral, we just have a minute left with you. Are you optimistic that there will be sufficient allocations this year? I mean, has the government been consulting relevant groups in the drafting of the budget?
They have not consulted us, but anyway, we have given them our proposals. We have every year, you know, when the budget, we write to them. But this year budget should be interesting because it's the first time the BN government and the opposition are supposed to agree to a budget which will be tabled. So there we should get the best of the both worlds, the ruling party and the opposition. But nevertheless, the voices of the Marhain, we have actually raised our issues, we have put forward our issues. It's just we hope that there's enough political will to deal with it and address it.
Aral, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was S. Aruchelvan from Gabungan Marhain and Parti Socialist Malaysia weighing in on what the B60 community needs from the budget that's being tabled tomorrow. We'd like to hear from you. What could the government put forward in the budget that would actually be helpful for you? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And after this, we'll look at what a gender-inclusive budget could look like. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Stay tuned to BFM's Budget 2022 special, brought to you by Ma Sing.
It is 6:38. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're focusing on, well, the budget that's being tabled tomorrow and looking at wish lists of sorts. And so we'd like to hear from you as well. What could the government put forward in the budget that would actually be helpful for you? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll shortly be looking at a particular perspective, which is a gender-inclusive budget. But we do have some thoughts on things that you'd like to see.
So Marnaidu says, I wish the government would include tax rebates for masks, sanitizer, COVID test kits, also for housing affordability and vegetable costs. So a wide variety of things, some of which is related to you know, directly related to health and healthy eating and the like. I agree with pretty much all of that. I would love to see tax rebates for vegetables. I think that note about housing affordability is one that every year we see some encouragement in the budget on that front. The real question is how much and how effective. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes this year.
I wanted to pick up on that suggestion for rebates on, you know, pandemic-related things like masks and sanitizers, and extend it perhaps to something that I personally have am also hoping they look at, which is devices and our increased reliance on the internet and on devices to connect to the internet, because I think that's really become such a presence in our lives. And while we do get a certain amount of rebate for those things, I think the parameters about what you can claim for, what you're eligible for, can definitely be made more inclusive.
We also have Winks saying, as our society ages, there is a greater need for aged care. The family dynamic of the young taking care of their parents is becoming less and less viable due to various factors. A structured aged care program should be developed to encourage the setting up of such centres, either by the private sector or by the government.
I really love that suggestion. I think it is. It's really everything that we're talking about, right? On the one hand, the depiction of a caring society, the depiction of an inclusive one, but also one that looks towards the future and a need that I think is going to become just even more important.
Just to say that, I mean, in terms of the conversation around aged care recently, right, it's been quite multifaceted. Firstly, there is this idea of needing to encourage more people to become carers and, you know, creating more of an infrastructure for that as a career and a profession. The other thing is, while I think a structured aged care program with financial incentives to set up, either by private sector or government, is a great thing, there should also be some form of relief for families and individuals who want to retain care in the home. And now what that could look like, again, I'm not sure, not an economist, but I do think that if we're talking about inclusivity, that there should be that option. There should be this openness to considering, yes, the traditional care center approach, but also if I choose to care for my aged family member in my home and all the costs that are associated with that, what are you offering? What can you offer?
So do continue to weigh in. We're discussing the budget and we'd like to know what you'd like to see that would actually be helpful to you. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now we're going to look at a gender-inclusive budget, or rather what that could look like. And for that, we are joined by Nuraiza Shamsul Baharin, who is a representative of the Gender Budget Group Coalition. Aiza, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, hi, everyone. Hi, Shamila.
So your coalition, of course, put forth a budget memorandum to the Ministry of Finance for Budget 2022. Walk us through those recommendations.
Okay, so mainly when we talk about gender responsive budget, we're not just talking about women, right? So we're talking about across the board, children, men, women. So we're talking about how do we address communities that are at risk or communities that are left behind. So we're talking about things like that. So when we talk about the budget, we looked at key areas. So we look at economic participation, we look at education, healthcare, and leadership as well. Leadership and poverty alleviation. So those are the key major issues that we looked at specifically.
Why is it important for us to consider policies in the budget through the lens of gender?
I would say that a lot of things, you find that certain groups of people get left behind. So when the COVID happened, right, so it was a shocking thing, I think, to most people. And then we looked at ways where companies can get some help through Perkaso, SOXO, and things like that. Then we realized as we went along that there are groups of people that were left behind. So let's say if you're a micro entrepreneur, you haven't registered your company, you don't have people who work for you, but you are badly affected, right? You couldn't even earn an income during this time. So then what help goes to you? Because we are not thinking in terms of a gender responsive budget. It's harder for people to see that there are groups that are left behind. So this is one of the reasons why we do this, so that we can see and look at ways that we can really, really direct a focused approach to how to help them become, you know, more sustainable or able to care for themselves.
So let's hone in on that a little bit, right? Sure. The last 1.5 years have been financially difficult for many people. How have this played out across the gender divide? Have women been impacted in specific ways?
I would say, I mean, if I look at myself, you know, I'm a single parent. I'm raising a child who's 7 years old. And all of a sudden, I'm at home. I have to I have this focus for some reason on cleaning the house. I don't know why. You know, like first few months, all I wanted to do was clean the house. And I have to like send my kid through online school. Then all of a sudden, I have to sit next to him to teach him, you know, what the teacher is teaching. So I found that to be a little bit overwhelming because all of a sudden, you're not just a business owner. You're a parent and then you have to be a teacher at home. So these are the things that you see a woman going through. Right, so a guy stays at home and still, you know, does his job like normal. So that he doesn't have to leave, you know, the home. So basically, that's one way you look at it. And you see also there's a rise in mental health issues. But that is affecting everyone. So it's not just women specifically, right? So it goes across the board. And it's, I think, due to the stress of not being able to provide for your family.
In practice, then, what would a gender-sensitive or gender-responsive budget actually look like?
So it would identify, let's say, if we're talking about economic empowerment, right? So we would look at all the different groups that would be affected by it, and then how would we address those groups? How can we future-proof these micro-entrepreneurs or these families so that they are able to be able to face the next pandemic as it happens? And also because, you know, we now talk about the new norm, right? So things will never go back to normal. So things are as it is right now. So how do we cope with our kids going to school 1 week and then stay at home the other week, then go to school again another week? So these are the real life issues that we're looking at. So when we talk about gender responsive, we look at, okay, who provides for the care of the child? Who provides for the care of the family, right? Do women have to like stop working so that these things can be done? Do we take turns? Do we allow a guy to take time off and yet his company will pay for part of his salary? So these are the things that we're looking at.
And how can this sort of approach account for the fact that women across different communities might face different barriers or challenges?
It's true. So we don't deny that. There are certain things that are similar, but there are certain things that would be more challenging. So say if you go online and you live in some remote area in Sabah or Sarawak, that is a lot more challenging because you can't even get internet. So we see people having to like, we are offering this course where it's called the Academy for Women Entrepreneurs, and they have to wake up at 3 a.m. just to be able to take the course, you know, because that's when the internet is strongest. So we see this kind of things, and it will take a lot of effort. I think that's one of the reasons why when we did this budget, we had 20 CSOs come on board, and then each one represented a specific group because we can't speak for everyone. So this is one of the ways where we get a specific CSO to talk about their committee and what their committee needs. And then we pull it all together and then we put it into a budget that hopefully can cover a little bit more, you know, and cover more people.
We're speaking with Nuraiza Shamsul-Baharin, who is a representative of the Gender Budget Group Coalition, on the idea of a gender-responsive budget. Do continue sending your thoughts our way. What could the government put forward that would actually be helpful for you in the budget? You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
This BFM Budget 2022 special is brought to you by Ma Sing.
It's 6:50. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And we are discussing what a gender-responsive budget could look like as we await the budget to be tabled tomorrow. We'd like to hear from you. What could the government put forward in the budget that could actually be helpful for you? Do weigh in. You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And we're continuing our conversation with Nuraiza Shamsul-Baharin, representative of the Gender Budget Group Coalition. Aiza, so this idea of a gender-responsive budget, are there other countries that have already implemented this approach? How has it worked out for them?
Oh, definitely. So you see countries, mainly if you look at the OECD, and then you see at least half of those countries have implemented some kind of gender-responsive budget. So part of this group, when we worked on our budget, we actually had training. So we had people coming in from the UK and a few of the European countries talking to us about how they did it, how it took them like 10 years, 20 years to do this. And we are very happy to say that at least in Malaysia, we see a very supportive government, I would say, right? So, for example, WAO and gender, they requested for budget last year to do to look at training for gender violence, and they received about 21 million to do this kind of projects where we go out and we train the frontliners on how to handle gender violence and things like that. So it's a very supportive government, definitely in Malaysia. So these are one of the things that we hope to put Malaysia on the map as being one of those countries as well. And it's not brand new either in Malaysia. So we saw that, I think one of the very first cities to do it was in Penang. And they received, I think they are the first city in the world to implement a gender budget, a gender responsive budget.
So has there been a lot of discussion or consultation from the government in the drafting of the budget this year?
We've talked to various groups of people, right? So we've talked to politicians, we've talked to certain government, because like a lot of people feel that if it's a gender responsive budget and the women groups are pushing for it, it's a women agenda, but it's not. And it's not just the purview of the Ministry of Women. So it goes across the board. So if we're talking about education, for example, how do we get more women in tech, for example, right? Or how do we get people trained in a specific field? And it doesn't have to just be women. It could be like the physically challenged. So it could be groups of people who currently are not represented anywhere.
Now, the budget, of course, is a huge document. It's hard for it to meet every need or take in every request. What are the top three things that you'd like to see Budget 2022 prioritize?
So I would say... for me, because I also represent WENA, so one of the things that we work with are women entrepreneurs, so especially the micro women entrepreneurs who are not represented because they do not register their business, right? So they are not seen as contributing to the economy. So what we do when we advocate is that please register your company. So be an enterprise so that people see that you are doing something for your economy and also contributing to the economy of Malaysia as a whole. So when we talk about things like this, we are looking at how can we support them in a way where I think one of the things that happened during the pandemic was that they lost that ability to actually have a cash flow or a small, they needed something like a small capital loan. So what we did was we raised funds and we did it ourselves, and we got partners to come on board, like the US Embassy funded some of the projects, Bank Islam is doing it, and then we've also got some other parties coming in to give this small loans at 0%, right? So we talk about things like that. So we're talking about how CSOs can do the work on our own without waiting for the government to do so. But we are fortunate that we got funding from people who also believe in the same things. So that would be one thing. It's like, how do we get, how do we reach out to more people, and how do we give them that small cash flow that they need to restart their business that they didn't go to a loan shop? And then the other thing that we're looking at is, I would say, like women in leadership. So this is something that if you look at the gender equality report, you see that Malaysia in the last 10 years has dropped to like maybe the bottom 30, because it's not that we don't take care of women. We know we have great healthcare, we have great education and all that. The only problem is that there's not enough women in politics. So all these countries around us, the Maldives, Indonesia, India, they have all surpassed us in the last 10 years because they have more women represented in politics. So I think that's one of the things that we need to focus on specifically. And I would also say, how do we help people who are living in an area where the internet connection, the transportation, all this infrastructure is not available? So can we look at a consistent effort to actually address these issues in the states where we need them? And one way would be, yeah, work with the CSOs, you know, work with the community support groups.
Aiza, thanks for speaking with us today.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much.
That was Nuraiza Shamsul Bahrain, representative of the Gender Budget Group Coalition, speaking to us about a gender-responsive budget. That's, of course, coming ahead of tomorrow's tabling of Budget 2022. And we've been asking you to weigh in as well. What could the government put forward in the budget that would actually be helpful for you? Do keep sending your thoughts our way. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We do have some messages.
Yes, so Vicky says, for the disabled community, many local shopping websites are unusable. Provide MDEC funding to train developers, use international guidelines on web accessibility, which will provide information on how to code in a way that is accessible to the disabled. Vicky, I mean, this is so important, right? Particularly as we've seen over the pandemic, so much shopping has moved into the online space. But the other thing is, this is one of those key examples of talking to people and also figuring out how to implement things well. Because this really sounds to me like something that can, that sounds great in the budget speech. But then the question is, how does it translate and trickle down into this exact action?
We have Anil saying, I would like to see an increase in the allowed deduction for lifestyle expenses and also for it to allow more items in the category. For example, with sports, not only equipment, but to cover apparel, shoes, or items that will encourage us to buy local products. This will also help spur spending and help economic recovery. I feel very similarly about things like books and reading materials. And I feel having lumped all of those in under lifestyle has actually done a lot of people a bit of a disservice.
Yeah, I remember this. I mean, it used to be, of course, that books was its own separate category, mm-hmm. sports its own separate category. And then it's like, hey, readers and racket users, just let's lump everybody into one. And it's true, right? And especially in a time where you are hoping that more people will be out there and spending, really, because you need people to be spending. This is certainly one way to go about it. I think that there are lots of expectations when it comes to personal tax that people are probably hoping to see.
Yes, and we'd like to hear from you. What could the government put forward in the budget that would actually be helpful for you? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This has been Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
This BFM Budget 2022 special was brought to you by Marsing. Reinvent spaces, enhance life.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.